Christine, greetings to each one of you this morning that's here. It's been a pleasure to be here this morning and hear what's been shared so far. And bless you all for coming out. This morning for our message, I'd like to turn to Philippians chapter 4. And we'd like to cover verses 1 through 9. That's going to be the text for this morning. It's Philippians 4, 1 through 9. And there's going to be five main points that we're going to look at. And I'll write those on the board as you're turning to that. First point we're going to look at is rejoicing, that it talks about in verse 4 specifically. Try a different marker. The second point is moderation in verse 5. The third point, be careful for nothing, or don't be anxious. We'll put down, don't be anxious. The fourth one we want to talk about and found in verse 7 is peace. And the final and fifth point is meditation, mainly out of verse 8. These points operate mostly out of our mind and out of our heart. If you think about it, each one of those, we're rejoicing or joy, moderation, and that word moderation there has varied meanings, but moderation and not being anxious, peace and meditation, that's all things that happen in our mind and our heart mostly. There are outward workings there's things we see outwardly that come from those in our heart and in our mind, but they're mostly things that happen inside of us in our intimate being. So I'm going to start reading in verse 1 there. I'm going to read the first three verses there in Philippians 4. It says, therefore, my brethren, and this is Paul writing from prison to the Philippians there. He says, therefore, my brethren, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved. I beseech Euodia and I beseech Syntyche that they be of the same mind in the Lord. And I entreat thee also, true yoke fellow, help these women which labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and with my fellow laborers whose names are in the book of life. So here Paul is in prison, and he's addressing his dearly beloved there at Philippi, and it seems like they were having some difficulties there, maybe some relationship problems, maybe some disagreements. But Paul addresses them from prison, and you can see there the way he addresses them that he had a lot of fondness for them, obviously. He talks about the dearly beloved and longed for. He calls them my joy and my crown. And then again he ends with my dearly beloved. So in spite of their difficulties and their whatever they had going on there, Paul still had a very sincere love for them. So that takes us to point number one that we're going to cover, and that is rejoicing. Verse 4, he says, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Paul seems to really emphasize rejoicing pretty emphatically. He says rejoice, and then he says, again I say rejoice. And that seems to be, he mentions that quite a bit in the book of Philippians. He talks a lot about joy and rejoicing. You know, why do we have joy, or what brings us joy, or why do we rejoice? We can have joy, or we can rejoice based on our circumstances, the things around us. There's many things that we do or that we participate in that make us happy and bring us joy. That can be, it can be varied for different ones of us. I think some of you may have gone bow hunting yesterday. Yesterday was the first day of archery season, I believe. Some of you may have gone out, and for those of you that identify with that, you know that if you successfully harvest a trophy, that can bring you a certain amount of joy. It'll cause temporary rejoicing. When your team wins the game, if you're on a team and you're playing a game and you win the game, that can bring rejoicing. What about eating your favorite food? Eating can bring rejoicing, a form of joy. Money, possessions, vacation, friends, all these things can bring joy. But if that's where we're looking for our source of joy, we're certainly going to be disappointed and we're going to come up empty. What happens when we don't have joy? What happens when we aren't rejoicing? We tend to blame others. That's often one of the first things we do, is we tend to blame others for our lack of joy. We tend to blame the circumstances around us, right? It's somebody else's fault, or it's because of the situation I find myself in that I don't have joy. What does Paul say about that, and what example does he give us? Remember, Paul was not sitting on a lounge chair on a tropical island with his toes in the sand sipping on an iced tea when he addressed the church here. He addressed them from prison, awaiting trial, and knowing that he might even face execution. He might be giving up his own life. That's the condition Paul was writing from, and he still exhorted them to have this joy and to rejoice the way that he did. And that was his life. That was the way Paul lived his life. He rejoiced in any situation he found himself in shipwrecks and whatever. Paul always seemed to rejoice. So what is that joy? What is that joy or the rejoicing that Paul had there? It's obviously, it signifies an abiding joy, which is a different joy than what we talked about early that comes from the circumstances that we can find ourselves in. A lot of the joy that we talk about coming from circumstances is not wrong. It's good if we can experience those pleasures and have joy in some of those things. There's also sinful pleasures of life that bring a certain amount of happiness or joy. You know, we might as well not lie about it. They do. They bring joy, but it's not the reason we see so much emptiness and so much dissatisfaction around us today is because people are looking to those things for their joy, and it's not lasting, abiding joy. So how do we experience that abiding joy? It comes only from having a personal, living, fruitful relationship with the Lord. There's no other way except to be connected to the vine, Jesus Christ. That's the only way that we can have the true, abiding joy that Paul is talking about here. So that takes us to point number two. Talking about moderation, and I'll read that verse. Verse 5, it says, "Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand." The virtue that's found in this verse is well worth taking a closer look. So the moderation, the word moderation there comes from the Greek word epieikos. I'll put that up here. And it's a very difficult word to translate. So the King James in Philippians 4 verse 5 here translates it as moderation. I'm going to write down some of the different definitions that we see, because if we go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10 verse 1, the same word is used there where he says, "Now I, Paul, beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ." So there it's interpreted as gentleness. So the same Greek word there that is interpreted as moderation here in this chapter is interpreted there in Corinthians as gentleness. And there's also different commentaries, there's definitely different translations of the word, so I'm going to write some of the different ones here. One of them is appropriate. Another one is mild, gentle, and the way it's used in this verse is moderation, patience, forbearance, sweet reasonableness. I'm guessing that we still might not grasp exactly what the Greek definition is there for that word. I remember growing up, there was especially a lot of the older men that would have been very familiar with German, the German language. I remember hearing a lot during Sunday school classes or Bible studies. I remember hearing in the German, it says this way, and they would say what it says in the German. And I'm familiar enough with the German, and probably some of you who speak Spanish and other languages know a little bit what you run into. The English language sometimes just seems quite limited, especially with descriptions. And I know in the German, they have a word for just about any phrase or any condition that you can think of. Where in the English language, you need a whole phrase to describe what they're saying, or a whole list of words to translate what they're saying in German. And even then, you don't quite hit it. But if you have a whole list like that to put together, you kind of get the general drift. So I think that's probably what we're doing with the Greek here. If we take all these words, we kind of get the general drift what he's trying to say. And I think it gives us a pretty good idea. And Paul says there, let your moderation, or let your, whatever version of these words we're looking at here, be known unto all men. So we should let our moderation, our mildness, our gentleness, our forbearance be known unto all men. There's a difficult part of that exhortation. The difficult part of that is there's some people that it's easy to be that to naturally. It's easy to be those things to certain people, especially when it's somebody who's operates the same way. But there's many people that are difficult to demonstrate that to. But Paul says there to be that to all men, or to let it be known to all men. Can you imagine our society today in the world if everyone practiced that? You know, the Bible really does have the answers. Everybody today wants to just push the Bible away, but the teachings of Christ and of Paul in the New Testament have the answers for all the problems today. Every problem that people face today, there's answers here, and very good answers. And even if, I had to think, if not even just society in general, but even if the church, even if those who claim to be Christians or follow Christ, even if they truly lived this out and they would make this known to all men that's what they were by their actions. Can you imagine how that would change our society today, even if just the church truly lived that out? Then at the end there he says, the Lord is at hand, and that could mean several things there. I think he's right there to help us live that out. He's with us. He's with us all the time, every day. He's also at hand. He's coming back for us. We'll need to give an account to him someday for how we live this out. And then we'll move on to point number 3. I'll read that verse. Verse 6 says, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. So be careful for nothing, I think signifies, like I had written up here, it can mean not to be anxious. And the word anxious means, one meaning is to be pulled in different directions. So like when your hopes and your dreams and your aspirations pull you one direction, but fear is pulling you in another direction, causes anxiety. There's a conflict there. Another synonym could be worry. Worry comes from a word meaning to strangle. So we can see that if we're fearful and we're anxious and we worry a lot, that's going to paralyze us and render us quite powerless. It can even affect us, it can affect us physically, not only spiritual, but physically. It's one of the greatest threats to true joy that we talked about earlier. Being anxious, worrying, fearful. And I think most of us can identify with that. I had to think when I was reading down over this passage and studying this, I thought, you know, there's nobody probably that needs to hear this passage more than I do. It spoke to me a lot just from studying it. And it's so easy to get caught up in worrying and being anxious about circumstances in the future and where we can find ourselves in. And I had to think there's different ones that I know here in church that have been in difficult situations, whether it's health-wise or whatever it might be, that have been great demonstrations of being like Paul was here, of going through situations like this and not being anxious and still displaying a joy and rejoicing in your life. And I want to bless you for that immensely. And we remember, if anyone had a good reason to be anxious, it was Paul. When he addressed them in the beginning of the chapter here, they were obviously had some contention and strife with each other. And he could have sat in jail thinking, it's like, you silly people. It's like, why are you doing this here? I'm sitting here in jail. There were also preachers in Rome who were filled with envy and strife and out to get Paul. And then, of course, Paul was there sitting in prison, possibly facing death. But yet he's admonishing them to not be anxious and not to worry. I do want to stress, this is not a call or not an excuse to be passive or lazy in any way. And I thought Matthew Henry, his commentary, I thought, and I'll just read what he says on partially on that. He says, observe, it is the duty and interest of Christians to live without care. However, there is a care of diligence which is our duty and consists in a wise forecast and due concern. But there is a care of diffidence and distrust which is our sin and folly and which only perplexes and distracts the mind. Be careful for nothing, so as be your care to distrust God and unfit yourselves for his service. So as we can see there, that that passage is not an excuse or a call to be passive or lazy whatsoever. And once again, Paul doesn't, after he tells us not to be this, he doesn't just leave us hanging there with no way out. He says, don't be anxious about anything. And he says, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. We have an example of this in Hebrews 5:7, and this is Jesus. It says, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death and was heard, that he feared. Freedom from anxiety comes when we spend more time on who he is rather than what our problems are. Isn't that so true? When we really begin to grasp who God is and who we are in Christ, that's when we take our focus off ourselves and realize who we are in Christ is when we really can overcome that anxiety and fear. He says, with thanksgiving. When we come to God in prayer with our prayers and supplications, he said to come in thanksgiving. You know, so often we're eager to ask, but we're slow to recognize and appreciate what's been done for us. So I think that's quite important. We must worship God for who He is. Remember, pray about everything. Pray with prayer and supplication, and pray with thanksgiving. That's the solution that Paul gives to anxiety and fear. Okay, that takes us to point number four, which is peace. I'll read verse 7. It says, "And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus." So now that we've covered the first three points, we've talked about rejoicing, we've talked about moderation, not being anxious. We see that the point number four here, talking about peace, is a result of the first three, actually. So if we have the first three reigning in us, most likely that will result in a peace in our hearts. Notice that it doesn't just say peace, it says peace of God. And is there a difference? Remember earlier we talked about the different kinds of joy and rejoicing. I think there's different kinds of peace as well. It reminded me of a story that I remember from, initially remembered from a school program, I think when I was in fourth grade in school, and I don't remember some of the details of the story, but it was a man that had a contest, and he got numerous artists to paint. He asked them to paint a picture that they would think most perfectly depicts the word peace, or true peace. And I don't know how many contestants there were, but there was varied renditions of the paintings to depict the true peace. There were some with fields of wildflowers growing, with bright sunshine bringing out the vibrant colors of the flowers. There was a little boy calmly swinging from a big oak tree. There was a mother holding a sleeping baby. There was an elderly couple sitting on the front porch enjoying each other's company. All great, all good, very good examples of peace. But the two finalists that he picked from in the end, the first one, and I thought about trying to draw this on the board, but I don't think I would really demonstrate peace if I scratched the drawing up there. So just try to picture this. I'll go down over the list here. Just try to picture these paintings in your mind. Just draw a painting in your mind, how you visualize these. So the first painting was a lake, just a still lake, way out back somewhere, calm water, not a ripple in the water. There was a canoe pulled up on the shore. There was a little cabin with a warm glow of light coming from the window. There wasn't even enough wind to shake the wisp of smoke coming out of the chimney of the cabin. There was beautiful mountain scenery in the background with an orange-red sky from the sun that was just setting on the mountain. And I had to think, typically, if you think of an orange or red sky, that actually signifies a forecast of fair weather in the near future. So there was even a forecast of fair weather. In the east, a big harvest full moon was just coming up over the horizon. It was far away from any turnpikes or highways. There was hardly a sound out there except just a few birds doing their last calls before they went to sleep for the night. I had to think, that describes, if I have to think of a perfect peaceful setting, that probably describes peace about as well as I could imagine peace. That's just a perfect setting of tranquility. So it was a lovely depiction of peace indeed. So with that one in your mind, the last one of the two finalists. So now switch to another painting, and now picture a jagged, rocky shoreline along the coast of an ocean with boisterous waves beating against the rocks. There's angry clouds churning overhead. There's bolts of lightning streaking across the sky. Thunder booming. the winds whipping the ocean spray up across the face of the rocks. Part ways up on the side of the rocks, there's a little cleft in the rock, just a little space, and in that space there's a little nest with a little bird on it, with its four baby birds that it's sitting on. And they're just calmly sitting there, and they're at peace. So which of those paintings do you think most best depicts true peace? I think needless to say, the second one was the one that was chosen to best depict the true meaning of peace. You know, peace is not always about stopping the storm. It's about finding peace in the midst of the storm. So there was nothing wrong with the second painting of the finalists there. It was a very true depiction of peace, but it was also a very understandable. It was also a very understandable depiction of peace. It was a peace that the world can understand. That is a peace. That is peace to everyone. Everyone can identify with that kind of peace. The second one is a peace that you can only understand if you can identify with the peace of Christ reigning in your hearts. John 14:27 says, Jesus, this is Jesus saying, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." And when I read that verse, I thought that was just a perfect description of that little bird sitting in the cleft of that rock there. And that is the peace that it's talking about here. You know, everyone knows what peace is. Everyone knows in their mind what peace is, but the true peace that he talks about here in verse 7, where he says, "In the peace of God," it's not just peace, it's the peace of God that passeth all understanding, shall keep your minds and hearts through Christ. Colossians 3:15 says, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also you are called in one body, and be ye faithful." I snuck something along from home this morning. I don't think my wife realized I brought it. I might just take a commercial break here. Just put in a little plug for Dorcas Pate and her pottery. I don't see her here this morning, but she does some beautiful pottery. And this summer, my daughter Kristen ordered a coffee mug from her for my wife's birthday. And I think my wife chose chose the saying on it that she ordered to have put on it. And the saying simply says, "Keep a quiet heart." And I think the inspiration from that for my wife was a book that she read by Elizabeth Elliot entitled "Keeping a Quiet Heart." And so Dorcas gave this to my wife then for her birthday. And if it was, my tendency is if I have something like this, I set it up on a shelf and I enjoy it and I don't use it because I'm afraid I'm going to break it. But my wife uses this cup, I think probably daily. So I have to admit, yesterday when I was studying, I didn't have the most quiet heart, I don't think, at times. But I kept seeing that cup. This morning, it was sitting in the bathroom on the counter in there. Keep a quiet heart. And I had to think, you know, I don't know exactly where Elizabeth Elliot's inspiration came from for that, but I thought, there's different ones of these where we're talking about peace, we're talking about joy, whatever. It's like, I think the quiet heart that Elizabeth Elliot was talking about there, I think she knew is the peace and the joy that only comes from knowing Christ. Because we know that she had, those of you that know the story of Elizabeth Elliot know that she had some very difficult things that she went through in life. But that was her motto, or that was the title of her book was "Keeping a Quiet Heart." And so that just, I don't, my wife probably had no idea that how this cup was blessing me just from seeing it sitting around, but especially yesterday and this morning. And so I just last minute this morning, I grabbed it and brought it along. Okay, so that brings us to point number five, which is meditation. And let's, for those of you that are there at Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, let's read that verse together. So I'll read it, and you all read it with me. So we're going to read here in Philippians 4, chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. So once again, we see an excellent source of true joy and strength. You know, both Eastern and Christian mystical meditation usually attempts to empty the mind. The goal is to empty your mind and to find and receive new truths from yourself or from within. And that's not the meditation we're talking about here. The meditation that we're talking about is not necessarily even about seeking a new revelation, but he gives us specifics here to meditate on. He's given us, and we just read, and it's basically self-explanatory. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure. You know, this is not, it's not complicated at all. You know, what he's saying here is not complicated. Often the reason we make it complicated or we think it's complicated is because we're not willing to follow his steps or his advice that he gives here. It's not complicated, but it requires submission and discipline on our part. And many Christians fall because they meditate on the wrong things. You know, there's so many distractions out there today to take up our time. It can be our cell phones, it can be social media, it can be all kinds of interests. It just seems like today there's more things than ever to distract us, and they're not all bad things, but they can keep us from meditating and focusing on that true joy and peace that we've talked about here. So, you know, if we truly meditated the way that he shows us to meditate here in this verse, you know, how often would that change my life and change my outlook on things for sure. So that concludes the five points there that I wanted to go over. So I'm going to read verse 9 yet. And if I could just have the boldness that Paul did here to exhort you to, he says, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me. That's what Paul says there, that you have seen in me. I wish I could say that to you this morning, that these things that you have seen in me, do them. Like he says here, Paul says, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, then he says, do. That's basically be like me. You know, how many of us have the confidence to say that? I know I don't. But he says that, and he says, and the God of peace shall be with you.